recording? Great.
You may want to just pull it out of its thing.
Maybe. There we go. Okay.
In effort to lessen distraction to others and to respect our speakers, we ask that you please take a moment before to silence and put away your cell phones and other electronic devices. In addition, we ask that you only have kosher-approved food and drink to respect our host, the temple. My name is Jim, and I am an alcoholic. Hey. This is an open meeting of the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to recover from alcoholism can. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment and refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA safety card and safety and AA. And our common welfare. Now, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And we've asked Robert to read the steps. So come on up, Robert. Go in there. 58. Traditions, steps. There we go.
Thank you.
Got it.
Hi, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robert.
All right, the 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statement of unity and anonymity and therefore ask all speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Angelica.
All right,
Angelica. Get on up here. Can't wait to hear you.
All this joy. My name is Angelica, alcoholic. My entire life, I've been performing. My degree is in music performance. This is something that I do every single day, but this is still pretty damn nerve-wracking. My sobriety date is November 28th, 2023. I'll hopefully, God willing, be celebrating 6 months this month, so that'll be fun. Thanks for that, Adam. So yeah, like I said, I've been a performer my entire life. So I'm used to, like, as soon as I opened the big book and it said, like, the actor, like, that was through and through me. Like, I was 100% always having this face. And even to this day, you guys see me at, like, my smiliest, but, you know, obviously those are sometimes the worst to look out for, because, like, we always just put on those faces as alcoholics, and that's something I've really realized over the last few months, that, you know, I have to dive into my emotions. So, I wrote, like, a few talking points because it's my first time speaking. So, my father, let's start there, right? We all have them. My father, he had all the isms without the alcoholism. So he was, or still is, irritable, restless, discontent, all of the things. Angry man who abused and cheated on every woman he's ever been with. I saw him abuse and cheat on my mother. And, you know, that's where I had my love or lack thereof of myself. Understanding that women were a prize and not, you know, anything more than that. So that's, you know, where a lot of the insecurity came from, which in turn, I was like, yeah, that drinking's gonna help that. Jumping around, I only have 10 minutes. Both my parents are 30 plus years sober. So my stepdad is 32 years sober. My mom's gonna be celebrating 30 years this month, actually. So I grew up in Alateen, Al-Anon, going to AA meetings. I knew the Serenity Prayer by the time I was six. I was running around these rooms with people just like you, people like me about my age. And I found this to be a very safe place. At that time, I didn't know where I was gonna be and where I would end up as I am here today. But it was nice to know that, you know, I had a place to be. Unfortunately, going to Alateen and Al-Anon and doing all that still led me here, so you never know what your life is going to turn out like, but here I am. The best part about both my parents being sober is knowing that it works. So as soon as I got in, I had a friend of ours say, like, how did you feel about XYZ? And I was very thankful not to have that struggle, because I've seen my parents just be so happy with their life. I've not seen them, you know, miss the drinking. I didn't know either of them, you know, before their sobriety. So I was lucky enough to have, you know, the 12 steps in my life, in my everyday. My mom always says she 12-stepped me before I was 12. She knew. But yeah, I am very grateful for that part of my childhood. Obviously, we all have shitty parts of our, not great parts of our childhood, but, you know, the good things are that I was able to come in and know that I had a safe place to do that. I was a drinker to avoid. My bottom wasn't, you know, like crashing a car or like losing, you know, the things, the jackpots. It was an emotional bottom. And I'm sure you guys see me at always a high. And so when I'm at a low, it's like pretty darn bad. And I knew that the moment that my partner looked at me and, like, I could tell he didn't love me anymore, that was when I was like, something's up, because everyone loves me. So, you know, I knew. I also had recorded a 10-minute long drunkalog on my father's phone about all the bad things he did to me. I also knew that that was pretty bad. And I knew, I was like, you're going to watch this tomorrow and hate yourself. And then joke's on me, because I just hated myself. So I knew that that was kind of where I should come in. And I called my stepdad and I told him I wanted to stop drinking after throwing up all over my mom's clothes in my childhood bedroom. And here I am. It was definitely a whirlwind, and it was definitely something that I needed to come to terms with, and I really wasn't willing to come to terms with. But I'm here now. My drinking was never sloppy. I was always the girl yelling at the bar, but not like doing anything crazy. Just like, hey, let's go dancing. But you know, there were just so many nights by myself, and I thought, you know, maybe if I stop drinking liquor, maybe if I only drink wine, maybe if I'm fancy and I drink sake, you know, I'll be good. But, you know, one drink a night turns into a whole bottle, and, you know, then I'm spiraling and I'm blacked out on my couch. And I'm like, what's happening? So, you know, now I realize the friendships I've made in AA are just so much stronger than some of the resentments and such that I have with my family. And like one of my friends was saying the other day, you know, the connections we build here, those are like no other, right? Like, we didn't ask to meet any of, you know, the other person sitting next to us, but there's something so real about being able to look over and have the same exact feeling, that like bottom, that low, that like no one else can describe, no normie can describe. Like, we all know what that looks like, and we all know what that feels like. And it's been really great to like introduce myself and meet everyone. 10 minutes is not a lot of time to ramble, but I'm feeling a lot better in my life. I'm feeling a lot more clear. The other day I woke up and I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, damn, she's gorgeous. And like, it was like, no, thanks. It was like no ill content or in no ill, what's the word I'm looking for? Y'all know. I was very happy, and it was nice to see myself for who I was and like who I'm wanting to be. And I'm really grateful for my sponsor, who knows she's my sponsor, who's sick tonight, and so she couldn't be here. But you guys all know her, and she's fantastic. And I'm really grateful for her. She's taking me through the steps, and I think that every day, I'm really grateful for all of you guys, for my little gratitude box. So cute. You guys wrote some really great things in there. But every day I get to wake up and just remember, like, it doesn't have to be like it was. I don't have to feel as low as I did, and I can ask for help. I also don't like asking for help. You guys will find that out. I don't like hugging. Don't hug me. But I'm learning to change that. I'm learning to be more vulnerable. And I think that, you know, coming and seeing you guys every day, same people week after week, the consistency is definitely helping me. How much time do I have left, Danny? 3 seconds or 3 minutes?
2.5 minutes.
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, every day I call, you know, my sponsor. I pray. I do the things I'm supposed to do. I'm not doing them perfectly all the time, but, you know, I try my hardest. I reach out to my friends. Shout out to Brian, Robert, Connor. Woo-woo. And yeah, I'm grateful to have met all of you guys. I remember my first night coming to this meeting, I actually heard my now sponsor speak. Crazy story. If anyone's heard Katie's story, it's great. But that was the moment I was like, that girl, she's my girl. And we have a connection like no other, so I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for Arisa, my grand sponsor. Y'all know she's queen bee. She's awesome. And I'm grateful for my sobriety. I'm going to end early because I don't know what else I'm doing. I'm rambling. Okay, thanks. Bye.
See, there is growth. It's great.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you, Angelica. We will now observe the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition trans something. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. There is a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. @beacon-group. Although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $200 a month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan.
You can see me, right?
See Kelsey. She's holding her hand up there. That's great. Thank you, Kelsey. With any questions that you might have, we thank you in advance for your generosity. AA has a set of traditions which apply to the group the same manner the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Jules has been asked to read the 12 traditions. There's Jules.
I'm going to open it up to the 12 traditions.
Why, thank you.
Thank you.
Where am I at? Okay. Way down. Nope. Am I doing it? Here we go. Hi, I'm Jules. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jules.
The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprises, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those who they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at levels of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jules. That was great. Beacon Group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month directly after the meeting in person and online. This is an opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members raise your hands? This mic. Great, thank you. Yeah, I made y'all hold your hand up too long. Now, we're going to welcome our friend Ramiro as the next 10-minute nice. Speaker.
Thank you.
Nice.
I was going to say good morning, but I forgot it's actually afternoon. Evening. So good evening. My name's Ramiro. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. Grateful to be alive, thankful to be sober. I don't remember who invited me, but I thank you all, right, y'all, Stethis, for the invitation. In case you're wondering, no, I'm not the Ramiro on the morning radio show with pebbles. Right, I know there's a lot of cool kids here at the Beacon Group, but that's not me. Right, that's same spice, but different slice, right? So that's another one. I did grow up, however, on the southwest border. I always felt like I had one foot on one side of the border, another on the other, never really feeling like I belonged on either side, right? And that's something that I think carried on for a long time, right? Always feeling like I never really belonged. I still live on the border. Right. In this case, though, I live on the West Roxbury, South Brookline border. Right? There are a lot of funny people in both communities, speak really weird English. You know, it's hard to understand them. And there's always driving problems. Right. They're always driving on the wrong side of the street and things like that. But I managed somehow to get here. Beacon's my home group. I'm also a member of other online groups. I belong to a men's morning meeting that I go to regularly. I attend BIPOC meetings, international meetings. I usually try to attend 4 to 5 in-person meetings a week. And I do what I can to, serve others, right, to help others. I have jobs in other groups, and this is something that I enjoy. By the grace of God, fellowship in this program, doing the steps of the sponsor, reading the big book, and of course, attending meetings like this. I've been sober since March 24th, 2018, and for that, I'm grateful. Like others state, true gratitude is something we feel and something we think about, and it's true, and in sobriety, I found out it's also part of the action I like to take or I'm able to take on a regular basis. So what was it like, what happened, and what it's like now? This is something that I found that I have to remind myself on a regular basis. I need to trace this, right, and sort of write this down to remind myself, because for some reason, it seems like the memory of my last drink is, you know, it's relatively simple. I drank for 40 years, And it wrecked my life, right? I know it's really hard and difficult to understand that drinking for 40 years could have any other sort of impact on your life, but it wrecked my life, right? So, you know, imagine that, right? My professional life died. My personal life dived lower than my professional life, and every facet of my life was a wreck. I remember this because it was on my birthday, and I'd had four double-blended scotches, right? I was on this lovely Center Street bar in West Roxbury, a bar that many of you know. My good friend Marty, right, is the owner of the bar, and we had been drinking for quite some time. And I was looking around and realized that we were swapping stories with the same people, hopes, dreams. Everything we had been talking about was something that we had discussed the night before. Because what happened was that usually we talked and we, you know, we did something like, oh, I don't know, we solved the world's problems, right? We solved the NFL problems. We solved the NBA problems. We solved political problems. We solved community problems. The only problem was that we couldn't solve was what I remembered the next day, because I always had a huge hangover, right? And that was something that followed my drinking for many years. So I always had this huge hangover in the morning. I'd wake up and I would vow to never, of course, drink again. And that was something that I think stayed with me for many years. But there was one night, I remember I looked around and I looked at these people, people I'd been drinking with for many years, and I realized that I didn't know anything about them, right? I didn't know their names. I didn't know what they did. You know, all I knew was that we drank and we solved the world's problems. But of course, I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know anything about them personally, professionally, anything like that. But, and I realized that after a while, of course, we've been closing the bar down. So I was depressed, right? And I realized I needed help, but I didn't know what to do. So I went and talked to a mental health friend, and that guy told me, that friend said, well, you should go and get help. Right, seek help. I was like, well, you know, what do? I open up the phone book and look up help. You know, I wasn't sure exactly what to do, and so he, you know, suggested I look. I turned to this mental health professional, and I eventually discussed some of the problems I had, and you know what was going on, and I explained to him that I had severe winter depression, but I usually snap out of it right when the snow thawed out and you know, when the seasons changed. But that year it stayed. So this guy, of course, asked me if I drank, and I said no, not really. You know, I only drink on the weekends. You know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. You know, I never really drink during the work week. And he asked me how much I drank. I said, I only have a couple, you know, a couple before dinner, a couple during dinner, a couple after dinner, and a couple more just in case. And, you know, I explained to him I never drink in January, right? I go dry in January. I never drink wet white wine, right? I stop drinking single malt scotch, right? I don't drink Bud or Bud Light or Lone Star or Pearl or Falstaff, or any of the beers I used to drink when I was a teenager, you know, that I had my drinking under control. You know, the other thing I mentioned to him is I didn't drink to get drunk, right? I drank because I liked the taste of alcohol, right? I liked the way it tasted, and I sort of felt like I enjoyed the sensation that went down my throat and how it hit my stomach, and that sensation was always something that I had been chasing for many years and trying to recreate that first sensation of the first drink I'd had, right, about 40 years before, and I hadn't had that same sort of sensation for a while, so I was trying to seek it out all over again. And he suggested that I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, well, you know, that's That's not me, but if you're the help person, so I'll go. And so I went to this meeting in this church, in this basement. Of course, I remember it's United Parish, and that's another story, but it was something that worked for me, right? I knew that something was wrong. I knew that, you know, the sensation or the relief I felt of sort of the treat, right, for working hard and playing hard had long since evaporated. And there was something else that was fueling what was going on with me. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I did something else. And what actually happened was that I did find relief in meetings, right? I did find the relief in meetings that I didn't know I sought. I found recovery work in the steps of the sponsor. I found that relief in a higher power, right, that I understand now and understand this power is doable with a higher power I call God. I worked the steps. I especially enjoyed the 12th step, right, is having a spiritual awakening, sharing with others, carrying the message, and of course, practicing our principles in all our affairs. My life isn't perfect. I have, however, as you can tell, I'm really very joyful, happy, and free, as you can tell just by looking at me, almost. But thank you, I'm almost there, so I'm on my way. But anyway, so thank you again for my sobriety, and thanks again to whoever invited me.
I get to say your name again. Thank you, Ramiro. We encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro, after the meeting. And now it's my honor and privilege to bring up Sarah, who's going to be our 30-minute speaker tonight. So, for the first minute, Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you, Angelica and Ramiro. It was wonderful to hear both of you. I identified. I was thinking, Ramiro, you live very close. My mother-in-law also lives right near you. So if you see a lady with two beagles walking around, that's her. Yeah, that's her. So I don't know why, I was just thinking about that. Like, what if Joan ran into Ramiro? But anyways, good to be here tonight. My sobriety date's December 1st, 2008. And I have a sponsor. I sponsor their women. And Beacon Group's my home group. It's been my home group since I moved back to the area in 2011. So almost since the very beginning of Beacon Group. And I love this group. I really do. I really do feel like this is my home when I walk through the doors, and I do not always feel like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have felt, you know, at different points in Alcoholics Anonymous, like the person in Alcoholics Anonymous that doesn't feel part of and feels left out in the room of people where everyone's talking about feeling left out. You know what I mean? So if that's you tonight, you know, a special welcome to you. And I've had a new experience here. And I don't know, like, there's been ups, there's been downs, but my heart, you know, is really happy tonight to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't, you know, it's just funny. Like, I was young when I came here, I was 18 years old. You know, I mean, I didn't really want to be here when I got here. I didn't really want to be an alcoholic. I didn't really think I was an alcoholic, to tell you the truth. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And today, like, there's no greater gift in my life than just, like, knowing, you know, to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic and that I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not saying I do this perfectly by any means, but I really don't struggle with, like, do I belong here or not anymore? And that's a gift. Do my actions always reflect that perfectly? Probably not, you know, but I'm really grateful to be here. So I'm going to try to share a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And yeah, we'll see what happens. So Okay, I'm a little bit. My son has been sick all week, so I'm dragging a little bit. So we'll see how this goes. So I grew up in Wayland, Massachusetts, pretty close to here. And I came from a family that, it was a good family. I mean, that's the truth. I think I would have told you differently for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I could give you a list of, the things my mom did that I wouldn't necessarily hope to repeat as a mom. You know what I mean? But, I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, she did a lot of things right, too. And my parents really did try to do right by me. And the truth is, they did. They really did. You know, there was a lot of things that they did right. I mean, my mom came from probably an alcoholic family. And I think probably it was an untreated Al-Anon, you know. And, you know, it was a, you know, I definitely grew up in, a high-anxiety home. You know, and I don't know that that makes me an alcoholic. You know, I have a brother and a sister, and neither one of them, you know, are alcoholics. My brother is just I don't know. He's just not, he likes to drink, and he drank more when he was younger. But for him, it was always, a good turkey sub or something like that. Just, a nice thing in life. And my sister, you know, I don't know. He has a baby now, and he doesn't really drink that much anymore, you know. And then I have a sister that, went really hard when she was younger and, got in a ton of trouble around the same age as I did and got kicked out of college and, the whole nine yards, you know. And then just, kind of, and, I mean, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous at the time that this was happening, so you can imagine I had some opinions about it. But I obviously kept all of them to myself. You know, I mean, she sort of just kind of outgrew it. She went to yoga. She became a teacher. And she's pregnant now, but I see my sister drink normally from time to time, but I can't even remember the last time I've seen her drunk. She just kind of grew up. And I'm not that person, you know, my experience was just totally different. Alcohol treated something inside of me that I needed, that, you know, I needed spiritually. I was the kind of kid that I was just I was anxious. I felt like I was worried about what everyone else thought about me. I was really good at school and I was nerdy. And I felt like I didn't fit in. And I just remember, you know, I remember I went to a new school when I was in ninth grade. I went to a private school just for 1 year. And I just, you know, it was I just had the worst year of my life. I hated everyone I went to school with. I made one friend and I didn't like her. And I just went to bed every night listening to my Christina Aguilera CD, wishing I wouldn't wake up. You know what I mean? Which is sad. I look at 13-year-old girls now and I think that's a child. You know, it's sad that I felt that way that young, you know? I found alcohol shortly after that, you know, and I really do believe it in some ways saved my life, you know, because it, you know, the first time that I drank alcohol, I totally identified with that special feeling, you know, of the alcohol going down for the first time. And, you know, when I first drank alcohol, for me, it really was a spiritual experience. You know, it really, what I remember, I will always remember sitting in the back of, you know, I was driving with my friends to a party in Worcester. That's where we were going. And drinking alcohol out of a water bottle in the back seat and you know, getting to the party and parking and standing up and feeling the alcohol hit me as soon as I stood up, you know, and just that warm feeling and just being able to feel you know, I could be in the present moment, you know, and I felt like I went from being the girl that was who's going to be there? What am I with the right people? What do they think about me? To everyone here is my best friend, you know, and we're all going to, you know, tell each other our deepest, darkest secrets. And, you know, I just, like, just feeling like I could be in the moment and feeling a sense of rightness about myself and a sense of rightness about my place in the world. And I just felt like I wasn't worrying about what people thought about me. I wasn't worried about the future. I wasn't worried about the past. I could just be in the present. And it was powerful. And it really did treat, like, I don't even think I realized how much I didn't have that freedom, you know, in my life, in my day-to-day life until I drank. And once I experienced that, like, I was definitely someone that chased it really, you know, like, and chased it hard as soon as I can and as soon as I could. And I, you know, like, I, you know, as I, you know, when I was in high school, you know, I mean, I did get into trouble from time to time, but not really. Like, I had pretty strict parents. Like, I, you know, I, my access, I guess, was fairly limited. I mean, I drank whenever I could. It just wasn't super often. And then when I went away to college in Chicago. You know, like, looking back, I remember, like, I was shipping all this stuff to Chicago. And I remember, like, stealing a bottle of tequila from my parents' liquor cabinet and, like, wrapping it in my winter coat and, like, shipping it out to Chicago with all of my stuff so I could have alcohol on the first night. Which, like, if you've never been to college before, I will tell you, like, if you are a freshman girl, you don't have to worry about getting alcohol on the first night. That's not something to worry about. Like, that, you know, like, it's just, but I was just so, the idea of, like, not being in control, or, you know, like, meeting all these new people and being in a new city, and, you know, just the fear of that. Like, I just couldn't, just knowing that that alcohol was available is like a backup option. You know, for me, it was just like I could breathe. And yeah, and I just, I was someone that, you know, once I got away from my parents and I was in this new city and I wasn't around all the people that knew me as, like, the girl that was in marching band, you know, like, I got to have a new experience in college. And I, it's amazing, like, I, it's amazing how quickly I went from someone that, you know, was like, I was the girl that, like, took the SATs with, like, I had, like, 10 sharpened number 2 pencils. Like, you know, like, you kind of understand. And, like, just a girl that, like, sort of my identity was like, I'm a good student and I have things together and, you know, all of that. To, like, I can't be bothered to, like, show up to class once. You know what I mean? And I'm just, you know, it's like I just was someone that, you know, went down really quickly, you know, and drugs came into the picture for me to some degree, and were mixed in there and probably exacerbated things. And I started to get in more trouble. I started to, like, you know, get called into the dean of students office and being told things like, you know, if you get caught drinking one more time, you're going to get kicked out. And it's like, that should have panicked me. You know what I mean? The crazy thing is, like, I didn't stop drinking and I never could have understood this at the time, but, like, really what makes me an alcoholic is a couple of things. It's, you know, it's one, when I put alcohol into my body, like, I have, you know, what's described in our literature as the phenomenon of craving, you know, or the physical allergy to alcohol, which, you know, really, I understand that to mean I have an abnormal reaction that's different than other people. It's like, you know how I said, like, my brother drinks and it's like a good turkey sub or whatever. It's like a nice sensation. Like, it's a different, I have a different experience. And I don't know any other way to describe that other than just, I'm in a room full of people that I think many of you understand that, you know, that I just, when I drink, it's Russian roulette. I don't know. It's like, sometimes I end up fine. You know what I mean? I end up back home in my own bed, tucked in, sometimes not, you know, like, sometimes I end up, you know, like, I think about, gosh, what I was doing at that age and, like, just putting myself in situations that we're scared. Like, I think, you know, God, like, we're scary. And I would end up in the hospital and I would, you know, I'd end up in strange people's beds. And I just, you know, and I didn't tell my friends where I was going most of the time. And, like, all the things you don't want your daughter to do is kind of what I was doing. And the craziest part about it is, like, I never knew which night was going to be which night. Like, it's not like I, you know, like, I would, like, go out and be like, I have a test tomorrow. I'm going to have one drink with my friends because I don't, you know, like, I'm an adult and I can do whatever I want. Or I just, you know, it's no big deal. And then I would end up, you know, like, missing it the next morning. And I just, it's not like I had any kind of control or choice once the alcohol was in my system. So that's part one. That's the phenomenon of craving. And then, but the other part that makes me an alcoholic, which I understand now, is that I, you know, I have some, you know, the mental obsession. I have the strange, you know, blank spot, you know, all those kinds of things that describes our book, which, you know, it's not that my only problem is, like, once I put the alcohol into my body, I can't stop. It's like, once the alcohol is totally out of my system, I make the decision again to drink, you know, which is insane. Like, for a girl like me, that's nuts. You know what I mean? Like, if you look, like, at my life at the time, you know, which was like, I, you know, and what was happening, which was like, I was about to get kicked out of school. Like, that alone for me was a big deal. Like, it's not, I'm not like my aunt who, like, followed the Grateful Dead around for 10 years. Like, didn't care. Like, I cared, you know what I mean? Like, my ego cared, you know, about being like, this is the thing that I could, like, say, like, see, my life is together. So I cared very much. And I'm about to get kicked out if I get caught drinking again, and I'm still drinking. It's like, who does it? Like, you'd have to be stupid, but I'm not stupid. So, like, when is that, you know? Or I just, like, it just got to the point where I, you know, like, my parents could barely speak to me. I really couldn't look at myself in the mirror. You know what I mean? I just, like, I had, like, shared a couple of times. I had, like, burned off half my hair. Because I fell asleep on a bowl of marijuana, and is what happened, and, like, half my hair, it's nuts, and so it wasn't, but so I was, like, weird looking, but it wasn't just because of that I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. It was because I just didn't, I don't know, like, I just didn't like who I was. I was I was raised with certain morals and values, and I, you know, and I was raised with a spiritual upbringing, which meant a lot to me. And I just was compromising those principles left and right. And I just, you know, like, I just, I knew, you know, I, you know, like, I was a spiritual person. Like, I'm definitely the type of person that when I'm under the influence, I really do enjoy talking about God. Like, that's such a, like, I think it's interesting, but I didn't have any kind of relationship with God. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, but I sort of knew deep down in my innermost self that I was separated from some sort of higher power, and that I just didn't feel right with myself, and I didn't feel right with the world. So what happened to me, because I see him at the halftime mark, I'll try to get to my sobriety, is that I came home from college my sophomore year for Thanksgiving, totally blacked out on the plane. I, to this day, no idea how I got home, but I did. And I think I, like, went to the dentist that morning. I don't really remember it, but there, you know, there are dental records. And then I remember coming to in my own intervention, and I, you know, my mother and a therapist were telling me, like, I wasn't going to be allowed to go back to school until I went to treatment. And so, you know, I did what any self-respecting alcoholic would do. I got out my calendar and I counted 28 days, and I figured, like, if I left now and kind of, like, missed finals, I could be back for the next semester and no one would be, you know, all the wiser. And so I went away to treatment, and they would bring in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I was the girl in treatment that, like, you're kind of like, that girl's not going to stay sober. You know what I mean? Like, definitely not. Like, I just, like, I just made it. I was just a girl throwing literal temper tantrums. I mean, I have a toddler. I know what it looks like. That's what it looked like. I was like literal temper tantrums on the floor, you know, with like fetal position, the whole thing. And saying, you know, I didn't think I was an alcoholic and my mom had overreacted. And you know, it's like, I did it. I was really the type of person that I had to be physically separated from alcohol for some period of time, you know, and really get to the place where I was like nice and miserable, you know, like, and just, you know, like really miserable sober and really wanting to crawl out of my skin and really aware, you know, through experience that like, you know, because I hadn't really tried to like, I'm going to stop drinking for a month or I'm going to stop drinking for a year. Like, I just didn't try that. I didn't see the need. And so I really had to be miserable enough, physically separated from alcohol, that, you know, it was clear to me at least a little bit that like alcohol wasn't the problem. You know what I mean? Like, if you know, alcohol for me was the solution. Like, it really was. If alcohol was the problem, you'd think I would like stop drinking and everyone would get along and I would feel good and we could get back to it. You know what I mean? But that's, I'm someone that when you take alcohol away from me, I want to crawl out of my skin and die. You know, like, that's just, I have a sober living problem. And so I was humbled enough, I guess, by my own despair and misery that I was like willing to open up my ears a little and listen, you know, as the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings came in and people started to share their stories. And what happened is like, as I started to listen, and I was miserable enough that I was willing to have an open mind, I started to identify with all of you and your stories. And not that I related to every single person's story. I know they say, like, come in here and look for the similarities and not the differences. I've heard that. But, like, I'm just 18-year-old Sarah wasn't going to be doing that. You know what I mean? That just wasn't my experience. But God put people in my life that were just, you know, that were, you know, had, some of them had very similar stories to me, or were also young, or whatever, you know, whatever sort of like ego thing I had of like, my case is different. I feel like God put people in my life that's like, nope, it's really not. You know what I mean? Here you go. And just kind of smacked me over the head with it. And I believed that like, if you understood how I felt, maybe if I did what you did, you know, that I could get sober too, you know, and I started to go through the steps, and I never really, like, I just, especially my first time through the steps, like, I definitely didn't do it perfectly my first time, as I'll share in a minute, but like, I just, you know, it's like, I never thought it was going to work. I kind of rolled my eyes through the whole thing, but I did. I was willing to do it. And I started to have a spiritual experience. And what that first looked like for me, you know, is in Southern California at the time, and I was, you know, like maybe $14 in my bank account, but like probably had sushi for lunch. And like, I was working at Build-A-Bear Workshop, which I hated that job, I gotta tell you. And I just, like, I could not, it's like, I just, my parents barely were speaking to me. And like, I don't know, like, I just was very unhappy with the quality of my life at the moment. But like, I remember, like, for the first time just walking down the beach in Southern California, which, like, who feels that bad for me, but that's where I was. But like, I just started to feel like, I'm okay exactly where I am. Things are going to be okay. I felt connected to other people in my home group, other people, other girls that I was living with. I felt like invested in their lives, you know. And I felt like I had people that I cared about and cared about me. And that was sort of my first experience of my heart cracking open and feeling like something bigger than me was taking care of me here. And that was sort of my first spiritual experience. And I, you know, and it hasn't, you know, and I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous ever since. And I, you know, it's certainly, there's been ups and downs. And, you know, I've moved twice in sobriety. I moved to New York to finish school when I was a year sober, and I was really miserable there. I think that's really where I had the experience of, like, I was in a huge home group, you know, and just feeling like, I mean, I always had a sponsor, I always had a home group, but I think I just, you know, it's like, I'm still dating a boy in Southern California, and I think I just had one foot out the door, and I just never really, you know, like, the other sides of our our triangle, you know, the unity, and especially the unity for me in the service. Like, I just really wasn't considering the whole of the Alcoholics Anonymous program, and I wasn't really, you know, like, I would show up to the meeting an hour and a half early to, like, get a seat, because, like, I am a rule follower, but I would, like, bring a book so that no one would actually, like, talk to me for that whole, like, hour and a half, you know, which is a little crazy, you know, and I would just, like, hope that no one would say hi. And I don't know, like, I moved to Boston when I finished school, and I just became, you know, like, very miserable here, you know, and I was, I eventually asked, you know, the sponsor that I have now to sponsor me, and started to have a new experience. Like, it was just, you know, like, it was just clear to me that if I didn't do, by that time, I was probably 2 or 3 years sober, and it just became clear to me that if I didn't do, like, you know, like, who was sharing the other week about the 99 cents and the Coke? I don't know if you guys were here, but who said that? I don't know. But the, you know, like, the idea that if you put 99 cents into a Coke machine and it costs a dollar, like, you get nothing. You don't get the Coke. And, you know, like, that's me. I'm the girl that's like, I want to do 90% of the work and get the A minus so that everyone thinks I'm a good AA. But, like, I'm not going to make that amends, you know, and I'm not going to pray and meditate every day. Like, that's just, like, something people say. And I started to have a new experience. And there was, like, certain unfinished amends, especially, that I just, like, I'd get to the point where I'd put my head on the pillow at night and just, like, couldn't fall asleep. And I just, you know, looking back, I'm like, I don't know how long I could have done that before it just... Like, I just felt like I was holding my breath. And I don't know how long I could have done that before I needed to drink. Like, I remember, like I said, I worked at Build-A-Bear Workshop. And I was someone that, before I got sober, I loved being around kids. Like, I really did. I was a camp counselor. I babysat a lot. I worked in an after-school program. And when I got sober, I just was like, nope. You know, like, the sound of children's laughter just was like... nails on a chalkboard. I just couldn't even do it. And when I was looking at the inventory with my sponsor, because it was like a real thing, it's like, and who, like, you think you become a nicer person when you get sober, but not for me. And really was what it was like, I had some unfinished amends about the kind of, you know, like, I had watched kids under the influence when I was babysitting, and one family in particular, and, like, needed to go back and clean that up. And it wasn't until I was willing, oh, God, it was like, still to this day, it was like, I just cringe every time I think about it. But I do feel free from it, you know what I mean? But it was just a hard amends to, like, look a mom in the face, you know, and say, this is what I did, and how can I make this right? And I, you know, and I just started to have a new experience. And, you know, it's like, just to get current, because I know I only have a few minutes left, and that went by faster than I really thought it would. But, you know, it's like, I got married. That's, like, another story. But, like, I finally convinced someone to marry me. But it's someone that is, like, it's someone in AA, and I never thought I would date someone else in AA again. He went to college with me. I never thought I would go date someone from that college. And I, you know, like... But I ended up with Brian, and we had 2 kids. We got married. We had 2 kids. We have a 4-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. So we have a COVID baby. And I just, you know, it's like, I just reflecting on this recently, because I feel lately like I've been having a whole new experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, like, almost a whole nother, like, spiritual awakening. Because I feel like what happened to me, as it does to many, like, moms in Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel like, you know, he was born February 2020. He was, like, a rough baby, like a slept 15 minutes at a time kind of baby. And I became initially with him, like, a true crazy person. Like, I'm here to tell you, like, if you are sleep deprived like that for, like, weeks and weeks and months at a time, like, it doesn't look pretty at the end, you know? But, like, bad, like, hearing stuff, like really not well. And I can share more with you after the meeting if you'd like. But, you know, I, you know, what happened, you know, we all went remote for a while, obviously, as you remember. And like, I just, you know, in my job, you know, I was at a job, you know, that was like really crazy. I'm a lawyer, I was in big law. It was like nuts, you know, and, you know, I mean, it's like, I've always had a home group. I've always had a sponsor. I've always gone to meetings. I've sort of like always had that checklist of things in my mind that like, I feel like if I'm doing these things, I'm okay. I've always sponsored, you know what I mean? I do feel like, especially the sponsorship has always kept me sober and kept me in the middle to some degree. But I feel like what just kind of happened is like, I just sort of, without really realizing it, it's like, you know how the, you know, like if you like boil a lobster, they like don't really know, I don't think, that they're like dying because it's such a slow process. I kind of feel like it was like that. Like I just started to like fall asleep without really realizing it. And it looked like for me, I'd like go into work and like eat a lot of snacks and like watch Netflix way late into the night and like, you know, and like just, and like it's like I'm doing a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I feel like, you know, just enough so my sponsor's not really like on my case, you know what I mean? But like my heart's not really growing and I'm not really feeling like I'm awake. And like what's happened in the last maybe like 3-4 months is like, it's really a gift. It's like, I feel like sometimes that spiritual disease can be a gift. It got so miserable at my job. I just started thinking to myself, like, if I have to do this for the next 30 years, like, ugh, like I just would rather just not work at all. I'd rather, you know, I don't know, like take my kids and move to Montana or something. Like, I don't know. But I wasn't going to do this job anymore. And I just got miserable enough that it's like, I just started to feel like I need to have a new experience. And like, yes, yeah, some of that was looking for a job, but some of that was just like reading new spiritual literature, listening to new speaker tapes and having a different experience in Alcoholics Anonymous and looking at what's the work I haven't been willing to do and talking with my sponsor about like, how can I do that? Because it's hard. Like, I will tell you, like, as someone that, you know, I've been in AA since I was young and I'm just like, I think by nature, a judgmental person. So it's like, I've seen moms for many years, like try to like juggle coming to meetings and having small kids. And I'm a little judgy about it. And like, you know, like, oh, they're not making meetings anymore. Like, you know, whatever. And it's hot. Like I was humbled. I mean, it's hard. It's really been very hard for me to like, you know, I mean, my son's been sick all week. Like my husband's home with him right now. It's just hard to keep all the balls in the air, but I feel I've been, you know, I don't know. Like, I just feel like this has been my foundation. And I'm so grateful to have a place I can keep coming back to and keep having a new experience. And I wouldn't still be here if this wasn't working for me. You know what I mean? And I'm so grateful to be here with all of you tonight. I hope you'll, you know, say hi to someone after the meeting and, you know, we do this together. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. That was great. I don't know where fellowship is tonight, but I think it maybe ought to be at a Subway, and because I've got a hankering for a turkey sandwich. I'm not as funny as Ramiro, but I tried. Thanks. So I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to invite Mike and Angelica up to talk about festivities and fellowship, and we're going to dinner tonight.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
here at Beacon, we do fellowship after the meeting. Tonight, we were planning on going to Bar Taco, but if anyone has other ideas, feel free to bring it up to me or Angelica. So, yeah, if you want to go, come see one of us after the meeting. The Beacon group has 2 monthly commitments, Hillside Detox, the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. That's going to be March 7th. And then the third Sunday of the month, that's this Sunday at 11 a.m. So you can see anyone with their hands raised if you want to get involved.
Woo, Angelica's alcoholic.
Hey, Angelica.
We are having an anniversary watch for Catherine R. Sphere.
No.
Okay, well, we're having an anniversary watch. It'll be the 21st from 9:30 p.m. to 12 a.m. She'll be a year sober, so come celebrate. And then Friday, February 23rd from 7 to 9, we're going to be having a skate night at the ice skating rink. It's free if you want to skate, $7 for skates. And then I will have a sign-up sheet with me tonight if anyone would like to sign up. And then, like I said before, we do have our gratitude box if you'd like to write something you're grateful for. It's in a weird box back there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And now for chips, we have Kelsey and Zubin here. There he is. Oh, there's Zubin, also known as Socrates.
Yes.
Okay.
Woo!
Oh,
jeez. Do you want to do the first part?
Yes.
I'll hold the book.
Hey, I'm Socrates, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Socrates.
This is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the basic text of AA. If you don't own a copy, please do not leave without one. It sells for $12. We also have meeting lists, which are free, and other AA literature available at cost. Please see our literature table, which I was supposed to set up for Catherine.
You did a great job.
Yeah, thanks. The Beacon Group marks milestones in recovery with chips. When you hear your time, please come up and get your chip. 18 months? 11 months? 10 months? 9 months?
Yeah. Woo! Hold on, I'm getting it. I'm going to get there.
That was 8, I think. 7 months?
No, that was 9.
Eight, 8 months, nine. Then. 8.
8.
Now 7.
7. Come on. 7.
Why did you get here? Thank you. Thank you.
Six months. 5 months. 4 months. 3 months. 2 months, 1 month, 30 days. Yeah. Woo, woo, woo. Yeah.
Congratulations. Sorry.
Thank you. And some would say the most important chip of all, a desire chip, 24 hours to 29 days, new or coming back.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Kelsey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kelsey.
Sponsorship is the cornerstone of AA's 12-step recovery program. If you are new to AA or our group and you do not have a sponsor, we strongly suggest that you get one. Will anyone who is willing to speak to people about AA or sponsorship please raise your hand? Thanks, guys. AA anniversaries are celebrated on the last Wednesday of each month. This is an opportunity for members to come and express their gratitude for a minute or so. We suggest that all celebrants donate $1 per year of sobriety to be sent to GSO, and of course, excellent cake will be served. To prompt unity and enhance sobriety, Beacon Group offers anniversary watches. This is an opportunity for Beacon Group members on their 364th day of sobriety to sit with their sponsor and friends beginning at 9:30 p.m. to watch their first year of sobriety be ushered in. Anniversary watches take place at the Brighton IHOP at 1850 Soldiers Field Road. If you are about to celebrate an anniversary, please see our anniversary chair, Brian. You can see Sarah after the meeting.
Okay, thank you. This has been a regular meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You are cordially invited to meet with us again and to become a member of our group. To be on our email list, please sign up with your name, phone number, and a sober date at beacongroupaa.com. Please remember our custom of thanking our speakers. The line will form in the back of the room towards the exit over there. And now for those who care can join us in the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.
Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
That was great. Thank you.
Started the prayer. Wasn't that your job?
I know. I let it go. It's like the serenity prayer.